morning and welcome to ASI's Tuesday Morning Show, where ASI's most outspoken editors talk promo products. I'm Melinda Legas, editor-in-chief of ASI's magazines, and Andy Cohn is laughing. What's up with Captain Kilcher?
You have to start the day laughing, right?
All right. We also have Michelle Bell here, editor of Supplier Global Resource. How are you, Michelle?
You know what? Every time I think about what I have to do in the next 2 weeks, I want to stick my head in a bucket. That's how I am.
I'll help you hold it there.
And Andy just said you should start the day off on a good note. Joe Haley, everyone's favorite managing editor, is here. Joe, you ready to rant today?
Of course.
All right. We'll be looking forward to that. We have a guest here. Kathy Houston is taking off for her birthday. Happy birthday, Kathy.
Woo.
But Nicole Rollander, editor of Stitches, is here. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning.
We also have Steve Hawk managing the tech station, and Vinnie Driscoll. Vinnie Driscoll is going to be answering the phones. You can call us, of course, anytime at 215-953-4979. Guys, we have a very special guest here today.
Yes,
Barbara Corcoran is on the line. We're going to talk to her in just a moment. She's going to be our keynote speaker at our very special ASI Women's Summit that's going to be held in New York in conjunction with the ASI show. That's on May 4th. Barbara, of course, at the summit is going to talk about how she parlayed a $1,000 loan into a $5 billion real estate business, something I'm sure all of our entrepreneurs are going to want to hear about. But we've got her on the phone right now, so let's get to it. Good morning, Barbara.
I'm here.
Thank you so much for calling in. How are you today?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Good. I guess it's going to be nice and sunny in New York as
well.
Oh,
you can't believe it. It's like the middle of the summer until the weekend, and then the temperatures drop 30 degrees. It's like a joke on New Yorkers.
Well, we're feeling your pain here in near Philadelphia.
Okay, same thing.
All right, Barbara, well, we're going to get right into it. Thanks for being our guest this morning. Give us a little background. Tell us how you started your business.
Well, I really had a stroke of good luck. I was a diner waitress tending my counter, I think washing it for the 10th time that day. It was a slow day. And a man walked in, 10 years my senior, in a really nice-looking suit. I had never seen a suit from the town I had grown up in. Everybody wore work clothes. But he walked in and ordered a cup of tea and then offered me a ride home, just like a movie. I thought, oh, I've been found. He suggested within 3 or 4 months, you know, you've got a great personality. You'd be great as a real estate salesman. And then on top of the compliment, he said, I'll give you $1,000 to start a business. And bang, that's how I wound up in the real estate business.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing.
It's like cheating your way to success. And then, of course, I slept with him. He definitely was going to be there for me if I had cash flow problems, but somehow it all worked out.
It's always the way to go, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, there you have it. Now, what was your biggest challenge you had in those early years of starting your business, which, you know, we know eventually became very successful?
Well, honestly, starting the business for me was very easy because of what I just cited. I mean, how many people get someone to give them $1,000 to start a business? But I also had the great advantage of coming from a very poor background where my mother raised 10 children in a two-bedroom flat.
Oh, my goodness.
And she did it hugely successfully, and she was almost like she should have been an Army sergeant or something. She was very strict. But what I had then, which I didn't know, I now know it in hindsight, is I had nothing to lose and nowhere to go but up. And that is such a privilege in life, to feel like there's no downside to jumping off a diving board and not knowing what it feels like to smack the water, or thinking, gee, I'm so lucky to get a chance up at this diving board. So I was very free starting a business. I had no expectations on my back from my parents as to what I had to be in life or how much I had to succeed. All my parents really wanted from each of their 10 children was that we grow up to be nice people. That's not a big order, you know that?
Sure, sure.
So that's the wrong answer to your question. I know I should have talked about struggle, but the fact of the matter is the struggle happened before I started my business, and particularly in light of the fact that I was a horrific student and didn't even learn how to read till I was in seventh grade, so I was labeled a dunce. So anything other than school for me was a leg up on life. So I was so thankful to get out of that jailhouse that everybody else calls school.
Now, where did everyone sleep if you had 10 children, 10 kids in a two-bedroom flat?
Well, my parents slept on the convertible sofa in the living room, which was, I think, popular then. And then we had a boys' room and a girls' room. The girls' room had 6 girls, and 2 girls shared each bed. So we had 3 back-to-back twin beds. That was almost like, well, we had an edge for a dresser or two. And then the boys, of course, had the luxury space. There were only 4 boys in their room. But it all fit because my mother was great at establishing systems and places for things. And we, frankly, had the biggest family in town, but we had the most organized household in town.
Wow, I guess you'd have to.
Yeah, I guess you'd have to. That's one way of putting it.
Yeah, I can't imagine having nine brothers and sisters. Barbara, I was wondering, what advice do you have for other women in business?
Well, you know, there's a million pieces of advice you could dole out, but the fact of the matter is that everyone's an individual, and what works for one probably doesn't work for another. But I think an overall advice I would say to all women, in fact, anyone, it's not just about women, is that you have the right to be there. I had a hard time myself thinking that I had the right to ask for a meeting with Donald Trump 4 years into the business, but I asked it. I swallowed hard and asked for the meeting, got it, and that made a difference in the future of my business. I had the right to walk into a male-dominated room where every firm in this big town called New York City, which was mind-boggling to me, was owned by a man and worked by women, and I was the only girl that walked in who owned a firm, even if I only had four people working for me at that point. But I think the confidence game of thinking that you really have the right to have as much success as you can possibly muster, and then just walking through the door was 90% of it, I found. Once you're in there, you kind of... you're on your feet, you're under pressure, you kind of figure out what you're going to say and what you're going to do. But I think feeling that you have the right to success is a mental game you have to play on yourself, and I had to reinforce it with myself with every step along the way, because I thought, how did this happen? Oh my, this can't really be me. But I had to like X out that thought and think, wait, I have the right to go as far as I want here.
That's a great attitude. Now, and speaking of women, Barbara, I've read your book, If You Don't Have Big Breasts, Put Ribbons in Your Pigtails. Tell us what that's all about.
Well, I mean, when I was waitressing at the diner, we had an unfair situation from my perspective. I was 23 years old, and Nick, the diner manager, had two waitresses at the counter, and I was competing against this woman named Gloria, who, before the days of chest implants, had a chest on her that was built like a shoebox, and she had a gimmick where, I mean, I couldn't make this stuff up, right? But her gimmick was she would stack two coffee cups on each breast and carry two more in each hand, so that was a total of eight, and hip through the double doors and wait on the men. Well, needless to say, she was the Fort Lee sensation, the town. And men were just drooling and waiting in line to sit at her counter as I'm washing my counter for the third time that day. But I was home bitching to my mother about it, and she didn't take complainers well in our family. You know, you either put up or shut up, basically. And she said, listen, if you don't have the big breasts, why don't you just put your pretty blonde hair and some braids and put some red ribbons on it, and, you know, everybody's going to like that, too. Well, I thought my mother was stupid, but, of course, I then did it, and the red ribbons matched my little red shirt with my black uniform that we were required to wear. And I'm telling you, that very night I was washing my counter, and I had the little red ribbons that Ramon Simone, who I later learned his real name was Ray Simon, awful marketing, right? But Ramon Simone sauntered up and sat down at my counter, and I think if I didn't have that little, those little blonde braids, the little Abner look, and I learned that night, oh, so men are just as attracted to the blonde bombshell as they are the great white virgin, and that's the way he saw me. I wasn't, by the way, but he saw me as that lovely little virgin at the next counter and asked to sit at my counter, and if that hadn't happened, you know, I'm sure I would have found a way to hustle my way to success somehow now in hindsight, but I sure didn't think it then. It was just a lucky break.
That's a great story. Now, Rich, our publisher just came in. Rich, would you agree with Barbara that the blonde bombshell is just as...
Oh, absolutely. I also thought about what you said is that that whole thing about people always saying, who do you think you are, which is just a way to keep people down. And Barbara, what you comment on, I thought that was so great.
Thank you so much. Huh.
Barbara, can you tell us about inexpensive ways to build buzz for your company?
We know that you're the master of this.
Fortunately, the most effective way to build buzz for your company is totally free. And so I'm always thinking that the little guy, if he is packed with that knowledge, knows that he can get buzz on his company for no money at all. And he's generally much more creative than the big company, with a lot less duress on his back and things to worry about. So the little guy can create a statistical report on their own business. That is the big kahuna of promoting your brand. If not for my Corcoran report that I published when we only had 11 sales, I mean, what right did I have when my competitors had 500 sales compared to my 11? How dare I go out and average my 11 sales and publish a report for average prices in New York City?
It's great.
It was preposterous. But you know what? For me, I didn't have attorneys telling me I couldn't. I didn't have committees I had to pass things through. I didn't have an old way of doing business that I had to honor. I was a young, free, frisky agent, and that's all I had to work with. So I slammed that report out. I typed it myself on my little Selectric typewriter, and I licked those envelopes and hand-addressed the envelopes to everyone who wrote for the New York Times that particular day. And you want to know something? 2 weeks later, I thought it was a Catholic miracle because we were raised so Catholic. I thought it was a Catholic miracle when I opened up the New York Times. I never even got a call from a reporter, and the headline of the real estate section was, prices in Manhattan dropped to an all-time low of $53,000. And it was my number. The first line was, according to Barbara Corcoran of the Corcoran Group. I'm like, I don't believe this. I can't believe this. But it put me on the map and made me an expert. And you know, the power of a magazine today, much even more so, blogs online, certainly have almost replaced the magazines and newspapers in their influence they wield. But the power you have, if you can get someone to quote you, is your brand becomes a real brand overnight. And I use statistical reports, baloney, frankly. Most of them were like, just like, what can we throw up on the wall? And I was constantly, constantly in the press. And that's what built my brand and got me the $66 million for my business when I sold it. It was not based on only sales. It was because we were the powerhouse brand that was constantly quoted. So press is the golden chalice for all brand building in my book.
You had chutzpah.
Well, chutzpah too, but you know, the little guy, here's the rub. When you're a little guy in business, you have the corner on creativity. When you're the big guy, you've got the corner on money. Once my business was 1,000 people strong, it was so hard for me to have an idea, take it from inception and deliver it to the curbside, because I had the committees, I had the attorneys, I had the accountants, I had the red tape. It was like driving a giant cruise ship versus a motorboat. Mm-hmm. The little guy can think of an idea, spit it out, and get it on paper that day and out to the press. And that's the great advantage of using press to build a brand when you're a little guy.
Barbara, just a comment prior to my question. I shared a bed for 3 years with my younger brother, so I learned at an early age that cold feet really do suck.
Yes. They lead to shame, cold feet is what happens.
You have a lot of contact with the media. How do you go about making these relationships, and how can others do the same thing?
Well, I think the first thing you need is a bridge to get into them to get their attention. And what the reporters do not need is a great story pitch. Frankly, what they need are statistics to support a great story pitch. So let's say that you were in, I don't know, what kind of business, name a business, I'll give you an example, other than real estate, which is so obvious.
Promotional products.
commercial products, like what kind of a product would you say?
Say T-shirts.
Oh, T-shirts. Okay. Let's say if I had a T-shirt company and I had no money to spend and I had to get my brand out there and get building it, the first thing I would do is I would invite two young children, two middle-aged children, two teenagers, just call on friends, we'll do it for free, and have them try on T-shirts. And I kept keep a careful note pile and say, which ones did they pick first? Which colors were they attracted to first? At what age? That's interesting, isn't it? Do kids always pick red and blue? Do teenagers always pick black and white? I don't know, but I'd sure find out. Then I'd do the design piece. Which design do you like better? Why do you like the design? I'd do my own focus group and publish a report by the close of business that day. Nothing more than one page on the T-shirt business. What's behind T-shirt selections in the United States? Now, let's say you're just opening up. You haven't even sold a T-shirt. Who gives a damn? The fact of the matter is you've already surveyed everything that you could possibly think of about T-shirts. That is how you get publicity, sending out that report. Now, what most people do, I find, instead, is they simply will send out a report like John Schmo, T-shirt company, about to open second office, or sold 10,000 to Kmart. They don't care about that. It's self-promotional. What they care about is statistics. Every good reporter needs statistics to substantiate a story. That being said, once the reporter is hooked on your little a fish hook and they call into you, the key to that is you got to be the first person to be on that immediately, always accessible. My poor husband, to this day, when he wants to get through to me, no matter what I'm doing, no matter where I'm traveling, he calls and says he's calling from the New York Times. I am there immediately. Why? Because I know the importance of speaking immediately while it's in someone's mind, and especially once reporters start calling you back for larger pieces, once you've built up tremendous credibility, the first person in your industry they talk to always takes the quote. You can count on it. So you want to be Johnny on the spot immediately, not call them back in an hour. By then, they'll talk to you, but all you're going to be doing is confirming your competitor's quote, and nothing's more insulting than that.
Now, Barbara, as we're hearing this morning, you obviously have a bit of a no-nonsense approach to business, and it's obviously worked for you. Do you suggest that other business people take that same sort of approach?
Everybody has their own style, so what fits me probably would look bad on someone else. My big mouth has also gotten me in a lot of trouble, speaking the truth and speaking right out, but it's also made me a ton of money, particularly as it pertains to the press. I think what is very true of people is people hear truth, whether you're telling it or not. People can see through baloney a mile away, whether you're watching someone on TV, whether you're talking to them on a phone. People can intuitively sense when you're not leveling. So I think truthfulness is in dire demand today, and I think it's well received, particularly by people in the press, if you're building your brand. Yes, I think honesty is sounds so corny, doesn't it? The best policy. Can't believe I just said that. But I think it's very effective in business because what it breeds is trust. Even if you're telling people what they don't want to hear, they're going to trust you as a result of it.
All right. Well, Barbara, you've obviously had a lot of success in the business world. Are there any instances that you're most proud of, and how did it come about?
You know, most of the instances I'm most proud of, because I was more like a mother to my, 1,200 salespeople and employees, they all revolve around their own successes, because they were the people who built my success. But that sounds so corny, doesn't it? But it's true. You know, if you build their success, they lift you on their shoulders and make you bigger and bigger, and that's exactly what happened. But I think the most most proud creative idea I had that saved my ass, frankly, in business was in 1987, when we were in the midst of a real estate recession and nothing was selling. And you know, you can have a bad market or a good market, but as long as you have trades, you can stay alive in the real estate business. But in this particular market, there were no sales, and that's a real issue. And most of my competitors were folding up shop one by one. It's like watching men drop, or like that thing with music stops and you grab a chair. It was the kind of thing. The music had stopped and nobody could find a chair. But at that particular moment, fortunately, I remembered a situation my mother took us to down in Toms River, New Jersey. We were watching the farmer lady across the street dispose of 7 puppies that she had. And she had all these fancy people from New York in fancy cars waiting in line to look at the puppies. But you know what her genius was? The farmer's wife, a typical thing, is she told everyone to come at the same time. So she had 11 buyers and only 7 puppies. And what do you think those buyers did? They were groping and killing each other to get one of her Jack Russell puppies. Now, why am I telling you this long-winded story? I'm sorry, I couldn't think of a quicker way to say it. But I remembered I was writing my goodbye speech to actually put my business to bed because I could not hold on another week. I owed so much money. I had nowhere to turn. And I thought of that sale, and I thought, whoa, I'm going to take those 88 apartments owned by Equitable Insurance that they had asked me to sell. And I told them, forget it. They're not saleable. And I thought of the idea of pricing them all alike. So I added them all up, 1 bedrooms, 2 bedrooms, studios. I added them all up, divided them by 88, and I priced them all alike. And I had no money for advertising, but I told all my brokers, bring only your best friends. They'll get the pick of the litter, the pick of the litter. Be there early. And no one was more happy in New York the morning I woke up and got to the sales office at 7:30 in the morning and saw a line of 200 people waiting for my puppies. You want to know something? I sold those within an hour and a half flat, and I made over $1 million in cash as a result of those sales. And you know what I did? I was able to go right out and rent 3 new offices and start staffing up when everybody else was laying low and waiting for the recession to pass, because I had tons of cash. I paid off my debtors. I was like, it was like a movie. And you know what was so great about that? I was just, and that's about timing and luck, which you can't negate the role of that in life, but my timing was perfect because it had nothing to do with the sales, but right after that, the market started turning. So I was poised for greatness as a result of just a lucky shot and a good idea. And that I'm so proud of, because it was just just in the nick of time. I was smelling death every night when I went to bed, you know?
Well, that's very inspirational, Barbara. We actually had one email question that's kind of related to that. So if you don't mind, we'll finish up with that. This is from a caller, Ed, and he says, what are some key sales strategies that can be used by a sales force in difficult times? Do you have one strategy that you could
share?
To
motivate your sales force?
Yes.
Yes, simply this, recognition. People will run a mile if you recognize them, make them feel important, and let them feel like winners, whether they're winning or losing. You've got to make your people feel like winners. The single best thing I ever thought of was handing out gold oversized horse ribbons because I wanted my people to start selling million-dollar properties. They didn't have the confidence. I said, anyone who sells a million-dollar property gets this gold, I didn't call it a horse ribbon, gold ribbon, and printed on the face of the ribbon was $1 million. Do you know? It was the young, naive salespeople who fell for it, not the old goats in my firm. And they said, holy shit, I want one of those. And you know what? I had a million-dollar deal that week, and it never stopped after that. So recognition is the name of the game in motivating salespeople, in my belief.
And it doesn't have to be expensive recognition, obviously.
Yes, definitely.
Wow. Well, that's a great story. Well, thank you so much, Barbara, for calling in today.
Guys.
We really appreciate it. We're going to look forward to seeing you at the ASI Women's Summit.
I'm looking forward to being there.
We'll see. And you're going to be signing copies of your book for everyone who
comes. Good? Oh, that's good. I could do that in my sleep.
Oh, good. Well, we'll look forward to seeing you there. Thanks again, Barbara.
Thank you so much.
And as a reminder to everyone, Barbara is going to be the luncheon keynote at our ASI Women's Summit. That's going to be May 4th at the Millennium Broadway Hotel from noon to 3:30 p.m. If you register by this Friday, you can save $100. It's only $149 for the whole event. First we're going to start with a networking reception for an hour and a half where you can enjoy wine and hors d'oeuvres while networking with your peers. Then Barbara will do a luncheon keynote, and she'll tell more great stories about how she parlayed that $1,000 loan into a $5 billion real estate business. And then we'll have a dessert keynote by Rosalie Marcus, the promo business coach, who's going to have an interactive discussion on how women in the industry can leverage their strengths to build their business. So go to asishow.com before or by Friday to save $100 on this special event. All right, Joe, what else do we have? Actually, we're going to pause for a moment for a message from today's show sponsor, I Promote You. And when we return, Nicole will tell us 9 traits of great small businesses.
This portion of ASI Radio was sponsored by iPromoteU. Distributors and salespeople, consider affiliating with iPromoteU today. Be more productive, be more profitable, be happier, and retain your independence. iPromoteU, the smart choice. For more information, call 800-850-3370 or email opportunities@iPromoteU.com.
We are back with ASI's Tuesday Morning Show. We just heard a great talk from Barbara Corcoran. She obviously told us some good traits of her business and how it was successful, and Nicole is going to tell us some other great traits.
Yeah, all 9 traits will be online later. I'll tell you a few. These are things, when I read them, I'm like, yeah, these are really obvious. But I think to actually, because I've worked at quite a few places, and I think to really find a place that actually embodies these, it's a little bit harder. So the first thing is they're not all about money. You know, like, we want to serve our members, we're editors, so we want to put out great products, and so we have a drive to do that. So you need a team that really wants to do that. It's not just give me my paycheck and I'm going home. Mm-hmm. Another thing, and this is what I love about our department, and it's because of you, Melinda, I mean, we're allowed to be really creative and mm-hmm. go with ideas and be innovative. Like, we're never told no. It's like, if we have an idea, it's like, go for it, do it. So, you know, being creative, being more than just about money.
Well, it's kind of like Barbara said, you don't have committees and lawyers and everything stand in your way of every new idea.
Right. So really letting your team, you know, try out new things and risk failure. I mean, that's a big thing. There's a lot of people who say, I'm not going to risk it because if I fail, well, then I'm screwed and I'm, mm-hmm. you know, but I think that the more you try, you know, you might fail, but you're going to succeed more than you fail.
I think that's the biggest thing, actually.
Yeah.
There's too many people who are just afraid to not just fail, but take any risk at all. And that, you know, you have to move ahead.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you kind of wonder, well, why won't you take a risk? I mean, is it you're afraid to fail, or you're lazy, or you're stuck in a rut? But I think that,
yes,
you know,
yes, and yes.
Lazy.
Yes, all those things.
Definitely lazy.
Yeah, so I think, you know, I mean, I think our team is a great example of a team that's creative. We take risks, and we try to be the best, and that's another trade
and sometimes
good
we fail.
Right. I mean,
no, we don't.
All right. Well, so, thanks, Nicole. We're going to put these online for everyone to see. I'm kind of scared to introduce this next topic because hopefully I haven't committed any of these sins. But Michelle's going to tell us 7 things your boss should never say to you. I hope I've never said them.
You actually have not. There are 7. I'm only going to talk about 3. We're going to put the rest on asicentral.com/radio. I think that if your boss or if you are saying these to your employees, then you need to take a time out.
Sit in the corner.
Take a time out.
Yeah. The first one is if a boss were to say, I pay your salary, you have to do what I say. That's a problem.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah. Threats and power plays just don't cut it anymore. Good leaders never need to threaten. So set a good example, praise in public, criticize in private, respect your employees' capabilities, and give credit where credit is due. I also think going hand in hand with that is, you know, and we do this here, certainly Melinda and Rich do it with me, to let employees, you know, kind of be themselves. As long as they do what they need to do, kind of cut them slack to just be who they are.
You mean you don't have to just fall in line?
No. another quote that you never want to hear from a boss, I don't want to listen to your complaints, especially in this day and age. That's really how you find out where your company has weak spots and where you need to shore up maybe some areas in your business that you need to make better. Your employees are really the ones on the front line dealing with clients. So if you're hearing complaints from them, they're things that you really need to pay attention to. The last one, again, that I'm going to talk about, we'll put the rest online, is I was here early, late on weekends. Where were you?
Just because
you choose to work first thing in the morning or late at night or on weekends doesn't mean that your employees have to. Again, if they're getting their jobs done, you know, they're getting their jobs done. That kind of subtle pressure to work 24/7 is a really good way to burn out employees. And again, in this day and age, you don't want to do that. And I think what Barbara said is really important. A little recognition goes a long, long way.
Sure. And you really can't measure, or I don't measure performance by hours that people put in. I measure it by the quality of the work. And, you know, you can't always tell that by hours.
Well, to do it, you know, to measure it by, you know, the hours put in is a distinctly, you know, kind of 1950s old school
time
way of doing things.
Time clock mentality.
Yeah, it is.
All right. Well, those are great, Michelle. We're going to put those online. It's funny. Michelle just grinned at Joe.
I winked. I don't even know why I did that.
Okay. Interesting.
1950s.
I think it was the 50s mentality that brought the smile to Michelle's face.
She's exasperated.
All right. Well, we know that, you know, as the job market heats up, a lot of people are searching for jobs right now. But Andy's got some common job search myths today. Andy, what are they?
I do. Well, the first one, and these come from CareerBuilder.com. And again, we will put all of these on our website. But the first one is that a resume should be only one page. Who agrees with that?
That's
a myth.
Yeah. I mean, if you've got 25 years experience, how could you put it on one page?
Right. The advice is that college grad should have a one-page resume. Otherwise, you should keep it to 2 to 3 at most. But the first page should have, you know, most of your information. And then a second or third page could have references or, you know, lists of awards or different things that you're
doing. By the way, I don't like it when people put in an objective on a resume.
Oh, that annoys me.
That's a totally college graduate thing. Like, that's
silly.
I don't want to get a job.
Your objective is to get a job.
Right. Yeah,
I mean, right. And all you could do, I mean, it might sound, the objective could sound silly, and it could be unfocused to the position you're applying for. So.
Right.
I don't know.
That should be no cover letter.
Well, if it is, if you have it and it's actually unfocused to the job you apply for, that I wouldn't interview that person.
Right. Well,
that's one of the ways that we weed out ones. I mean, you should have a profile statement instead of objective.
Well, no objective.
You go, Nicole. Profile
statement. What else, Andy?
Thank you, Andy.
If 8 people at a company interview you, you need to send a thank you note only to the person you'd report to.
Wrong.
Yeah, totally wrong. If somebody took the time to interview you, you got to send them a thank you note.
Every person, it's
so easy right now. So if you don't send thank you notes, you are out.
Sometimes we've had 2 good candidates for jobs, and one person has sent us all notes, and the other one hasn't, and that can be the tipping point.
Can I tell you, I interviewed somebody on Friday for a position here, and got a note in the mail, not emailed, in the mail yesterday.
The mail is even Friday, more impressive.
I would do both, though, actually. Right. I would suggest both, because the mail can take a couple of days.
Right.
I would do the quick email and the mail.
But that's
pretty quick, though, Friday and Monday.
It is. Yeah. The person obviously turned it around quickly, and that's a good thing.
That's impressive.
But if you went on a Tuesday, then that note might not come till Thursday or Friday. But that is very good. The handwritten note is a nice touch. Last one. You shouldn't take notes during an interview. Anybody?
That's obviously a myth.
Yeah, that's a myth.
Make
sure that it's okay with the person, politely say, do you mind if I take notes or whatever? But, you know, yeah, it shows that you're interested and that you want to learn more about the company.
Absolutely. And here's another one I have. If the person says, do you have any questions? Never say no.
Yeah.
Ask a question.
Come with questions,
even if
for
you
sure.
Know
it's true.
The answer. Ask a question.
Show some interest in the place that you're going to try to work in.
Yeah, and the cop-out response is, do you have any questions? No, I think you answered everything. You didn't ask me anything. Right. Like, I didn't answer you because you didn't ask.
Yeah. Oh, but they had questions and you covered them.
Right, but no.
Well, here's the other side of the hiring coin. Joe is going to tell us how to avoid hiring a bad egg. How do you do that, Joe?
Well, obviously, we dropped the ball about 12 years ago. As he looks at Michelle.
Oh, is this my throat that looks being thrown back at me now?
All right. First of all, they say
back
news.
In 1956.
This was dog just came into the room.
This was from the Wall Street Journal. First one, use a formal job application. You can get more there than you can get from a resume. Andy, stop cheating. And they say it's also good to have a statement on there that says any false information is means for immediate dismissal or disciplinary action. So it's good to have that legal.
Well, in this day and age, too, falsifying your resume, it's so easy. You can be found out so easily, yep. I think. So don't do that.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
That's your advice for the day. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Call former employees and check references. Now, they say a lot of times that the HR department is just going to say, yes, that this employee worked here from this date to this date. They say the question to ask them then is this person suitable for a rehire? Would you rehire this person? And if the answer is no, that's a red flag.
Yeah, I think that's
a good
big
question.
Perform a background check.
You're a criminal?
I am not.
No, I didn't ask if you were a criminal. Oh. Perform a criminal background check? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Ooh, now you are.
The background check can also confirm the accuracy of information that the candidate provided on the application. So if they said they've never had a misdemeanor, you know, well, maybe the background check could show that they did. Felony is worse. Invite a potential hire for a paid tryout. They say that's a good thing to do. So in our situation, I guess it would be hiring someone as a freelancer to do an article that they might be doing for Stitches magazine. If that was the position, do they get all the nuances of the embroidery industry? So those are a couple of the things that are on there. We will post this on the website, and you can avoid hiring bad eggs.
All right. Speaking of bad eggs, I think we have just enough time for a little rant from Joe Haley. He's got one prepared.
Doubleheader with Joe.
Give me time to shuffle his papers around. You got your bifocals on?
Let's go. Not bifocals, they're reading glasses. Why, oh, why is everyone on the road an idiot? Seriously, can anyone drive, Michelle?
Ooh, I second that.
No one obeys all the traffic rules. They just decide which ones they are going to follow. For instance, this morning, the guy coming from
a
side street.
Have you heard this before?
Mm-hmm. Haven't we covered this? All right, sorry, go ahead.
He did not even give that stop sign a second thought. He just barreled through it and turned in front of me, although there was not a car behind me. However, while stop signs for him are optional, he ran a second one about a mile down the road. The speed limit was sacred, as he never even reached it. He drove 5 miles below, and I didn't even give him the horn, Andy. He eventually made a right-hand turn at about 2 miles an hour, so he didn't roll his van. So, you know, safety is important. Not to worry, about 3 blocks later, I picked up another slowpoke who lays through a very windy section of street at 10 miles an hour below the speed limit. However, once the street straightened out and went from one lane to two lanes, this guy turned into Mario Andretti. No one was passing him. I felt good because at least his annoyance was away from me. But once one of his car racing buddies was right behind me, just about a half mile down the road, right on my tail tailgating.
That was not me, Joe.
I know, I'm looking at you.
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm done. With that, I'm out.
Wow, I think I really upset Joe. All right, thanks, everyone. We're out of time today. Thanks to Thanks to today's show sponsor, I Promote You. Thanks to Barbara Corcoran for calling in. And, of course, sign up now for the ASI Women's Summit. Go to asishow.com. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday.